This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Hoops practice. The team on the court is the Los Angeles Sparks of the Women's National Basketball Association, or the WNBA. The Sparks players are preparing for this Sunday's first game of regular season play against the Las Vegas Aces. Player Alexis Jones, who was recently traded to the Sparks from the Minnesota Lynx, echoes other players when she says she is pumped to be on the team and ready to show what she can contribute this season.
We're out here enjoying it, laughing, but also going hard at the same time. I want to be here, and I'm willing to learn, and I want to play hard, and I'm willing to be a part of the greatness that they already have.
That greatness is LA Sparks history. It was one of the WNBA's founding teams back in 1997. It's qualified for the league's playoffs 18 times. And it's won three WNBA championships, most recently in 2016.
That's it! The LA Sparks have slain the Mighty Lynx! They are your 2016 WNBA champions!
But despite all that success and all that history, the LA Sparks, like other teams in the WNBA, faces a lot of challenges that have nothing to do with athletic ability. And a lot of it comes down to attention and respect, and what people really know about the Sparks and women's pro basketball, if anything at all. Just go to a place filled with hardcore basketball fans like the courts at Venice Beach and ask, just like KCRW Saul Gonzalez did.
What do you know about the WNBA? Do you know much about the game, about the teams, about the players?
No. I don't want to say so, but no, not really.
I'm doing a story about the WNBA and the Sparks, and wondering if you know anything about the WNBA.
I don't really. I'm sorry. I know, no, not really. I gotta be honest.
What do you know about the WNBA?
They don't dunk, they don't do shit, so I'm not into WNBA.
Like, if there was a WNBA player on the court right now, would you recognize her?
No, not at all.
But an NBA player, you probably would.
Of course.
As it fights for attention and respect, the WNBA is also wrestling with soft attendance, fewer sponsorship offers from corporate America, and scant coverage by sports media. And women basketball players are increasingly speaking out for higher salaries. Right now, the best WNBA players earn a minuscule fraction of what the guys in the NBA make. One person who thinks long and hard about all those issues is Sparks president Danita Johnson. And on the eve of the WNBA's new season, KCRW's Saul Gonzalez talked to her in her office.
What goes through your head before opening night or that first game of the season?
That all the fans actually show up.
Danita Johnson has spent her adult life on the business side of professional basketball, working for a variety of WNBA teams and the Los Angeles Clippers. In January, she was tapped to lead the Sparks, and Johnson says she has a lot to do.
I think internal job is first making sure we have a great culture and building our team internally. Externally, it's about acquiring more partnerships and gaining equity within the market space.
What does that mean?
So you hear women's equality and women's equality in sports, but you can have equality, but it doesn't matter unless you have equity. Where's the investment dollars? Where are the investments to actually help us build and grow our businesses? And so for us, it's like, how do we get to a great place of equity as well?
Where are those dollars? Where is that equity?
You know, a lot of it is spent in other places. It's like 99% of partnership dollars is spent in male athletics and like 0.4 in female athletics. So just imagine the pool that we're selecting from. We're not even at a full percentage that is actually coming to us. And not just the WNBA, I'm talking about women's sports as a whole.
The WNBA is over 20 years old. It's about to start its 23rd season. What is your assessment of where women's professional basketball is in the United States and this team right now?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different parts to this. From on the court, the play is at the highest level I've ever seen. And I know people say this type of stuff, but I truly mean it. As if you look at like college women's basketball, you look at the women's Final Four. We actually got Kalani Brown on our team. We drafted her out of Baylor. Like we look at these women that are coming into the game, it's actually elevating the game on the court. So from an on the court perspective in the play, I think we're at the best quality basketball we've ever had in this league.
No apologies there.
No apologies there. It's amazing to watch. And no offense to those that paved the way, but the game is elevating. So I think from a league perspective, we're trying to just figure out, you know, like broaden our reach. You know, there's more people out there. There's, you know, we have that millennial group, these young entrepreneurs out here, people that are looking for things, and they're connecting to brands now because not just because it's a big brand, but also they mean something and have a great story to tell. And we're one of those leagues that has that.
The WNBA is trying to tell more of its story to more people with the new marketing campaign this season that includes a new logo and advertising built around the slogan, Make Way.
We don't just play this game. We celebrate it the way our minds, our bodies, our passions are meant to. Unapologetically, undeniably, us.
Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, Danita Johnson has to figure out a way to break through all the noise in the crowded LA sports market.
We're the only female basketball team in the state of California from a professional level. We are the last team to ever bring a championship to the city in 2016. You know, like, we have a space. And now it's just continuing to expand on that and to open people's eyes to what's right in front of them. And traditionally what happens is most people, they say no, 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 no. They come into the game, they watch a game, and they're like, oh, I didn't realize this was so good. It's experience and having people that are open-minded to try something different than the norm.
Do you get sick of people like me sitting down with you and asking you to contrast WNBA and the Sparks to NBA and the Lakers or the Clippers?
I have my moments of it, to be honest. Absolutely. I think, you know what? In moments like this, what I would challenge from a media perspective is to say, if you're going to sit and have that conversation, be just as knowledgeable about our players and the interactions of our business as you are about theirs.
Sparks averages the highest attendance in the WNBA. I'm sure you're very proud of that. Get about 11,000 people per game who go to Staples. But that still leaves a lot of empty seats in that stadium. So how do you get to 15,000 seats or 16 or 17?
Got it. We have to be talked about. You know, and people in our marketplace, we have to be a part of that everyday ingrain, just like our counterpart teams are. And it takes not just we can do that, but the voices of others and places to help leverage that.
So do you grit your teeth when you're watching or reading local sports coverage and thinking, why aren't you talking about my team, Channel 4 guy or Channel 2 person or 7 or 11 or what have you?
You are asking all my favorite questions. I know, but absolutely I do. And especially when we went back to back to the finals. And 16-17. We won in 16 at the buzzer and we weren't on the cover. Like, it's disrespectful, you know? And so when is it okay? When do we have beat reporters and people at every single one of our games? And I'm not just talking about all our market. I'm looking at all of our markets for the W and women's sports across the board to have that fairness. You know, when we watch an ESPN or one of those networks and they're going down, not just women's basketball, but women's sports as a whole, where do we fit? Is it just on ESPNW? Can we not convert over? You know? So all those things play a role. So yes, do I get frustrated? Absolutely. But one by one, day by day, you work at it.
Another challenge the WNBA faces is the size of players' paychecks. The median salary in the WNBA is about $71,000 a year. Meanwhile, an NBA player's minimum pay is $838,000 a year, with, of course, many men making tens of millions of dollars more. Low salaries force lots of WNBA athletes to play abroad during the league's offseason just to pay the bills. Danita Johnson acknowledges the pay disparity, but says it can only be closed if women in basketball and other sports get more respect.
This goes back to equity and coverage, right? Equity is people investing dollars, sponsors. You think about when you look at all these other teams and leagues and things, people are spending millions and millions of dollars to invest to either partner, broadcast deals, things of that nature that really help implode how actually pay is played out to people. So to me, it's the broader of like, how do we look at an equity scale versus just saying, hey, let's look at each individual player pay. Like, it's a bigger thing than just, let's just pay one more. We all know that women are underpaid, right? It's a fact. It's not hidden, just like you said about us. We know that's happening in the workplaces. So how do we continue to build an ecosystem that builds equity and equality within the space for women?
You're saying it's almost like a cultural project that goes beyond one team or one league or one sport or athletics as a whole.
Yeah, it's the same way that we sexualize women in sports. And when women play more feminine sports, how the coverage is different versus if you play a sport that looks more masculine, right? It's the ecosystem we live in.
Thanks so much. We appreciate this.
Thank you.
Well, while we're on the topic of pro basketball, you probably want to know what's going on with the Lakers. Why is it that that team, with all the advantages that the Sparks lack, huge salaries, big endorsements, giant TV deals, why can't the Lakers seem to get their act together? It is like some crazy soap opera over there in Lakerville right now. And one person who has a front row seat is ESPN senior writer and NBA insider Ramona Shelburne. Hi, Ramona.
What's going on, guys?
Ramona doing what all Angelinos do, and that is talk to us from her car. Where are you right
That's
now,
right.
Ramona?
I guess I'm on the 5 freeway passing through Burbank on my way downtown to go do the jump with Rachel Nichols.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
All right. So we got you on the 5. I guess when we're talking about the Lakers, the most recent trouble started with this.
So today, I'm going to step down as president.
That's Magic Johnson resigning as president of the LA Lakers basketball operations last month. And then this week, Ramona, as the Lakers were about to announce the team's new coach, Magic then goes on ESPN show First Take, and he says this.
I start hearing, you know, Magic, you're not working hard enough. Magic's not in the office. So people around the Laker office was telling me, Rob was saying things. And
Rob Pelinka.
And I didn't like those things being said behind my back, that I wasn't in the office enough and so on and on.
Ramona, what is going on with Magic Johnson?
I think Magic Johnson is about Magic Johnson, right? You know, I think Magic faced a lot of criticism after the way he stepped down on April 9th, right? It was like sudden. He didn't even tell anyone. He just did it. He just grabbed the mic and stood in front of the media and stepped down and just caused a whole bunch of trouble and left everybody picking up the pieces for him. And rather than sort of own that criticism or own the consequences of those actions, it was like he just couldn't take not being beloved because he's Magic Johnson. I mean, everybody loves Magic Johnson, right? And I thought what was rough about this second interview, you know, this had been planned for 10 days. And the Lakers checked in with him several times. Hey, we're going to, you know, is there anything we need to know about? by the way, we're scheduling our introductory press conference with our new coach on that day.
Yeah.
And he would just say, nope. It was just that I wasn't having fun coming to work anymore. This was just me feeling like I couldn't be Magic. And this was really damaging over the last 8 weeks. Like, a lot of why the Lakers are in the headlines and why they seem to be so dysfunctional is just in the way that Magic stepped out and then had to go and do more damage 8 weeks later because he just couldn't take the criticism.
Everything, Ramona, seemed to be headed in the right direction for the Lakers, at least at the interim. I mean, the team did land LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
Magic Johnson there, the hiring, those two seem like they wanted to attract more talent to the team. Now people are questioning whether Jeannie Buss is actually in control of the ship.
Right. I mean, ultimately, isn't, you know, when you're the owner, the buck stops with you. If somebody isn't telling you the truth, if somebody isn't handling things correctly, it's kind of on you to fix it. It's kind of on you to swing your sword. And I think her greatest issue as an owner is this oversized sense of loyalty to people she considers family. And that's an admirable quality. But, you know, I had a line in my column, which I keep coming back to, and I keep thinking about it because it's hard to say you're bad because you're too loyal. But, you know, loyalty has a way, you know, especially with family, of creating blind spots.
Maybe you should start covering the LA Sparks instead, Ramona.
You know what? I've always loved covering the Sparks because when you cover the women's game, it's just very pure, right? We don't have all these agendas and innuendo. And I think sometimes that's because of the money, right? Like when there's millions and billions of dollars at stake, things change quite a bit, right? And when you cover the women's game, it really is, it feels like it's just about the game. It's just about women who are, quite frankly, playing for a lot less here than they would overseas, but because it's important to them to play, you know, stateside. And I like what the Sparks have done. You have maybe a year or two left of Candace Parker, who's one of the best players on the planet, and you know, they want to maximize this window, and so they went out and traded for Chinne Ogumike. She's going to be playing with her sister, Nneka Ogumike. That's going to be kind of fun because I don't know how many people they're going to have in the post, right? They have just a bunch of great post players. But if Derek Fisher's the head coach now, that's a team that is going for it. And I've always said about women's sports, like we tend to cover women's sports with special events and role model personalities, right? Like those are the moments where we get interested. So like the Olympics or the Women's World Cup, we get interested at the NCAA tournament. But if you cover the WNBA day in and day out, and you get to know the personalities and the women involved, they're really inspirational. They're really interesting, and I wish that we would cover them more so that you could live and die with them every day, right? As opposed to just at these little moments. And I don't know if people are aware, like the Athletic, which is one of the new websites around there, is committed to covering all of the NBA teams daily for this, at least this next year. So I'm excited that people are doing that, because how do you create interest if you don't have somebody chronicling things day to day?
Have you made it to Burbank yet, Ramona?
Yeah, I'm all the way to Dodger Stadium now. Traffic's pretty good. But now I'm about to go through all of my shortcuts, you know?
Yeah.
Because heading into downtown, this is where things, the traffic
gets a little
dicey.
All right. Well, we're glad you're making it safely.
Yep.
And ESPN senior writer, NBA insider Ramona Shelburne joining us. Ramona, thanks for your time.
Anytime.
Probably dodging a few raindrops too. It is raining like the Dickens on the 210 freeway right now near the San Gabriel Valley. We're seeing some rain around Burbank, the 5 freeway too, and spotty showers, some heavy downpours across the area today with temperatures mostly in the 60s. A lot of clouds, and the rain chances continue into tonight and tomorrow. Coming up, from hoops to the harbor, a new add-on to the Aquarium of the Pacific has a bigger message. That's next on Greater LA. Back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. One of the biggest aquariums in the country is getting even bigger. I'm talking about the Aquarium of the Pacific in Long Beach, which has added a whole new 29,000 square foot wing that's called Pacific Visions. It cost about $53 million to build. It opens to the public this Friday, but as luck would have it, KCRW's Frances Anderton got a sneak peek, and she's here to tell us all about this big new addition. Hello, Frances.
Hello, Steve.
So let's talk about this, because I've seen the pictures of this place and it looks like a giant blue whale made of glass.
And they'll be very pleased to hear it described like that.
Really?
Because I'm quite sure that was one of the evocations they were looking to. The designers are called EHDD. They're from San Francisco. They actually designed the original building, which is rather different in form. And here what we have is essentially an expansion. It is this blue biomorphic shape. It's made rather cleverly of three layers of panels of glass. And they essentially reflect the land. They reflect the sky, trying to do what the sea would do without, however, being reflective, which would be dangerous. Dangerous for birds.
Mm.
And that actually keys you in to some of the goals of this project.
The goals, which we will, of course, get to. What is inside this big blue whale, though, this Pacific Visions wing?
Well, that's what's really interesting about this wing. It genuinely is surprising, because you go to Long Beach Aquarium and you expect to see that big tall tank with the diver in it swimming around the fish. You expect to see tanks full of cool stuff from the sea. No, what's going on in Pacific Visions, as it is called, is something rather didactic. The president and CEO of the aquarium, Jerry Schubel, has been set for years on bringing to the public, in a palatable way, issues having to do with climate change, issues having to do with species destruction. And so what you find in there is easy on the eye, but nonetheless educational exhibits, including what they call an art gallery, images of beautiful sea life, a very large screening room, very fancy, a bit like an IMAX, and in that an 8-minute film that also is telling stories of how we the human are exploiting the earth and what we can do to mend that. And then we have what they call the culmination room, which is full of these interactive exhibits that get you to really think about how you yourself might engage with healing the planet. But let's hear from Jerry Schubel, how he describes his goal.
Instead of just expanding on the original concept of more tanks and more fish, why not add a new wing that provides context and perspective of what we humans are doing to all of those animals in the original building and to all the other animals on this earth? So that was the whole idea behind Pacific Visions. It lets the visitor explore pathways to alternative futures and to discover how we human beings are going to determine what that future will be for all life on Earth. And it will be our decisions about energy, food, and water, and it will be the decisions we make over the next couple of decades.
It's quite a hefty purpose right there, right?
It is quite a hefty purpose. And he doesn't just take on sea life and the challenges for the oceans, which are very real and very present given Long Beach's proximity to the sea and the port. But also he takes on agriculture. He takes on the future of cities. He takes on alternative energy sources. He takes on our diets and how we might change the food that we eat and the way we do agriculture. He's taking on some really big issues through Pacific Visions.
The aquarium obviously is geared toward children, right? This is an educational experience, field trips, things like that. So I guess the question is this a little too heady, right? Isn't this a pretty heavy subject? We're talking about climate change and the earth is dying and we're really in trouble.
It is definitely a big topic. He and his team, they brought in a lot of consultants to put together the exhibits. They're very conscious of that. So they've definitely presented the material in fun ways. So, for example, you know, even the images that they juxtapose to tell this story of destruction and then hopefully solutions are presented in a lively way. They have a very young presenter and it's kind of visually very inviting. They have fun exhibits like a digital waterfall and you kind of jump in the water and fish run away that every kid of every age is going to love. The interactive exhibits, there's buttons to press. There's kind of simple questions like, what do you think uses more water, bath or shower? What do you think is the best source of energy? You know, sort of fun stuff to ask. They've generally done it in a way that's very, very palatable. But just to reinforce how much Jerry Schubel was thinking about this particular issue, here's what he told us.
We've tried hard not to make people feel guilty or not very guilty. But, you know, it's like the Joseph Campbell power of myth. You drag people down into the depths of despair, and then a hero comes along and saves them. In this case, all of us created this situation, so we all are responsible for creating this urgent situation. And the only way that we're going to get out of it is if we all become heroes. And so this is a story about, if you want to become a hero, these are some of the things to do.
I think what he's trying to do is send people away with questions. And kids are very alert to the climate change issue these days. It's being talked about at school. So he might be actually playing to a very receptive audience.
Frances Anderton, who hosts KCRW's DNA. Frances, as always, thanks.
You're very welcome, Steve.
Well, that is Greater LA. Coming up next on KCRW, all the president's lawyers, Josh Barrow and Ken White, bring you the latest on calculation and litigation in Washington, and obviously no shortage of material today or this week. Our producer of this program is Catherine Barnes, editor Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Chuck P., and Phil Richards mix the show. Christian Bordahl keeps the train running on time. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears today. Have a great day.